Our next case this morning is United States v. Valentin Andino. Captain Ward, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
Yes, sir.
And Major Hennenlotter, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government? Very well, then. Please proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, and may it please the court. I am Major Trevor Ward, and along with my co-counsel, Lieutenant Colonel Alan Abrams, I represent the appellant in this matter, Airman First Class Valentin Andino. Chief Justice Olson, with your permission, I'd like to request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. When a CCA determines that relief is appropriate for non-constitutional excessive post-trial delay under Article 66D2, that relief must be meaningful. If the meaningful relief contemplated would be inappropriate, then the CCA must at least explain why the relief contemplated is inappropriate under the circumstances of the case. Here, the Air Force Court neither awarded meaningful relief nor explained why the relief they were contemplating would be inappropriate or otherwise meaningless.
Now, I understand your argument makes good sense from a policy view, but why should we as a court of law interpret this statute in that manner?
Yes, Your Honor, and it's a combination of multiple canons of statutory construction as well.
But my question to you, why do we get to the canons of statutory construction? We've got clear language. It says appropriate relief. It doesn't say meaningful relief. It doesn't say tangible relief. We've got appropriate. Appropriate is not a word that is incapable of having a clear meaning. It's used both in layperson's terms and in legal terms. There isn't some added connotations put on it based on how it's been used for centuries or so forth. So why isn't it a situation where we look at appropriate, say what the clear meaning is, and never get to any of your arguments about statutory construction?
Your Honor, I think it is because of this Court's precedent in discussing appropriate relief in the tardive context, in the non-constitutional excessive post-trial delay context. In that context, this Court has referred to appropriate relief being required to be meaningful. And we know that Congress adopted this Court's precedent in Article 66D2 because of the way they used the phrase appropriate relief for non-constitutional post-trial delay, as well as the fact that the CCAs all treat Article 66D2 and tardive relief as the same. And that's why we get, Chief Judge Olson, to the canons of statutory construction to figure out what Congress meant when they wrote the phrase appropriate relief. And when we look at those canons, starting with the prior construction canon, is...
Well, before you get there, Major Ward, going back to the Chief Judge's question, this notion of meaningful relief, it appears to reside in this case called Pfluger. Is that what you're relying on?
That's where it originates, Your Honor, yes.
Right. And so the argument appears to be, hey, look, Pfluger, when you refer to our precedent, Pfluger mentions meaningful relief. Now, the problem is, as I understand it, is that when you look at that case, good old Judge Efron, who's a dear friend of mine, a brilliant colleague, I had no citation for that statement. Do you agree with me?
Your Honor, I agree that Pfluger does not have any citation for the phrase meaningful relief. What we do know is that the appropriate relief, the tardive relief context, is set out to remedy a specific harm.
Let me ask you this then. Now, when it came to tardive doesn't refer back to Pfluger, does it?
Tardive doesn't. Tardive is after Pfluger, Your Honor.
No, I understand that, but in this notion of meaningful being appropriate relief, it seems that the court would have mentioned Pfluger and the notion of what meaningful relief is when they decided tardive, but they didn't, right?
Your Honor, the later decisions from this Court do when they discuss tardive relief in the context of Pfluger. So you have Borisak and Roche, which both talk about tardive relief, the appropriate relief, requiring the meaningfulness that this Court set out in Pfluger.
Okay. You got me.
So why didn't Congress use the word meaningful?
Well, that was going to be my next question.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the reason is because Congress knew how this Court had already defined appropriate relief. It was adopting this Court's tardive precedent, and not just...
How do we know that? Wouldn't they have mentioned something about the word meaningful if they, in fact, were adopting it?
Not necessarily, Your Honor. The prior construction canon and the canon of imputed common law meaning tell us that when Congress adopts a phrase that's been settled by the law, by the courts of this land, then they do so in the text of the statute. There's no other definition needed when the courts have already defined what it means. And in this case, this court has defined what appropriate relief means. That is, that it must be meaningful. And that's the two canons, the prior construction canon and the canon of imputed common law meaning. And had Congress sought to use some other type of phrase than appropriate relief, then maybe we would be in a situation where we would look directly to that text. But here we have context. And that context is over a decade of this Court's precedent telling us that appropriate relief for non-constitutional delay should be meaningful.
Now, do you accept the proposition, Major Ward, that you could have appropriate relief that isn't necessarily meaningful? Or no? I guess you don't.
I think I do, Your Honor. And the reason is because we have two phrases that are not identical. We have meaningfulness and appropriateness. And there are cases, the Army case, for example, Feeney-Clark talks about this, where you might have the only meaningful relief be in a case be, say, the reduction of confinement by 30 days. But given the facts and circumstances of that case, that type of relief is inappropriate. That certainly can be a case. But in those cases, this Court has been clear that a CCA must discuss what relief was contemplated, why that relief would be meaningful, but why in that particular case the relief would be inappropriate.
What do you think the Court was trying to do back in the age of Tardif, an age ago, I guess? What do you think the Court was trying to do?
Judge Marks, I think that the Court was trying to remedy a specific
That's a trick problem. Question because I was here, so I know.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And I think the Court was trying to remedy a specific harm. You have, of course, Moreno for the constitutional post-trial delay, and then you have consistent government malaise in processing cases, but not all of those cases are going to have prejudice, which you need for the constitutional delay. So then we have Tardif under then Article 66C, established to create a remedy and to create a carrot and a stick for the government to process cases appropriately and quickly. In this case, there was an over 1,000-day delay. And so not only is the relief in this case not meaningful, it doesn't take into consideration the great amount of delay that the government had in this case, in combination with what the Air Force Court recognizes, is an institutional problem in the Air Force with the government putting together records of trial. It is because of that that we know that Congress is adopting Article 66D2 as a Tardif line of precedent. We know this also because Congress ultimately gets rid of Article 66D1, which is the successor to Article 66C, which is where Tardif used to exist. Now, of course, our argument is that it exists in 66D2 alone.
Is your approach that it needs to be meaningful relief? Is there tension there with the other language in Article 66D2, where it says a CCA may provide appropriate relief?
No,
so you're saying the CCA does not have to provide any relief, but if it does, according to you, it must be meaningful relief. Doesn't that stand in tension with one another?
Potentially, Your Honor, but that's the same precedent we have from Tardif. Tardif did not require that CCAs, even in the face of excessive post-trial delay, find that relief was necessary or that find that relief was appropriate. They could have always said that we recognize there was delay in this case, but we're not going to provide relief. That's still an option under D2, as it was an option under Tardif and its precedent. All that this recognizes, and this Court's precedent recognizes, is that when a CCA decides that relief is appropriate because the government malaise is so high, that that relief must either be meaningful or the CCA must explain why the relief they're contemplating would be otherwise inappropriate.
But what if
just for a point of clarification, so your point is not that there has to be meaningful relief, but that if they don't give meaningful relief, they have to explain why they're not giving meaningful relief?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can I ask another question about Pfluger? It kind of seemed like in Pfluger, the CCA didn't really understand the consequence of what it, or the lack of consequence of what it had done, and that the CCA wanted to give relief, but the relief they gave wasn't really relief at all because the convening authority had already issued an order. Was Pfluger really just about correcting a mistake that the CCA had made. Not that you have to give meaningful relief, but clearly the CCA wanted to give meaningful relief, but what they came up with was not meaningful, and so we just sent it back so they could do something else.
Your Honor, I think context is helpful here, and it really highlights the difference between appropriateness and meaningfulness. In that case, in Pfluger, of course, they remitted the bad conduct discharge at the convening authority level, but then the CCA said, well, we're also going to get rid of the bad conduct discharge, which, of course, would have a meaningless effect on the appellant. But that still might have been appropriate. There can be an appropriate sentence adjustment that doesn't impact the appellant practically and wouldn't be meaningful. So you can have one but not the other. The problem is, just as Your Honor was pointing out, is that in Flager, in Roche, the CCA doesn't explain why the relief they're giving would be meaningful, because that's a requirement this Court has under Tardif, and it's a requirement that Congress adopted in Article 66d2.
Now, based on that answer, I can probably guess your answer to the next question, was that Pfluger was remanded, and all they did was change a reduction to E1 to reduction to E2. But there they did explain why that was meaningful. I guess he got some more pay.
Yes, Your Honor.
But is your point in this case that they didn't explain why the reduction, and maybe there is no benefit, but why the reduction the diminishment of the reduction would not be meaningful?
That's exactly right, Judge Maggs. And more to the point is that there's no evidence in this case in the record that relief here would be meaningful even if the CCA had discussed it. As we talk about a little bit in our brief, automatic forfeitures applied in this case as a matter of law because of the confinement. And so it's not clear that there would have been any practical benefit from Airman Valentin Andino getting that rank adjustment. He certainly, at least there's no evidence in the record that he received any pay for that. And when we look at Borisak and Flager, the provision of some kind of financial benefit is really what this Court is talking about in the context of meaningful relief.
Counsel, what would be an appropriate explanation in this case? Suppose the CCA said, listen, we understand it's not going to affect pay or anything else, but we're just firing a shot across the bow of the government to tell them, look, this didn't cause any prejudice in this particular case, but you should move these cases along, and that's why we're doing it. Would that be a significant enough explanation?
It would be. Well, Your Honor, I think it depends, and I hate to give that answer, but I think it depends on the whole circumstances of the case. And I think when you're looking at both appropriateness and meaningful, when it comes to meaningfulness, the CCA has to discuss the practical benefit of an appellant before the relief is given and after the relief is given. That's kind of an objective analysis of a practical benefit. But then taking a step back, we can look at what appropriateness means, because you could have meaningful relief that would be inappropriate. And appropriateness takes into context the charged conduct, the impact on victims, the typical things you would see in sentencing, but also the excessive post-trial delay in the particular case. Some cases you might have a couple hundred days. In this case, you have over 1,000 days. That's a lot of delay. And so a court has to assess both of those in different buckets, the meaningful relief for the practical benefit before and after the relief is given, and then, of course, the appropriateness under Article 66d2 in Tardif to determine if the relief contemplated to be meaningful would be appropriate given the circumstances.
So I just want to be clear what your argument is here. At some points here, you seem to be saying all that's necessary is for the CCA to explain why or why not it was meaningful. Is that your argument?
Your Honor, I think it's best put this way, that when a CCA determines that relief is appropriate for non-constitutional delay, that relief must be meaningful. In the alternative, if it's not meaningful, then the CCA has to explain why the meaningful relief in the case, whatever it be, would not be appropriate under the circumstances. Because that's what this Court tells us in Borisak and Flager is what the CCA should do when they come across a situation where the CCA needs to award some kind of appropriate relief, but the only relief available to them that would be meaningful would be wholly inappropriate under the circumstances.
And where does this come from in the statute?
Your Honor, this comes from this Court's precedent, which, of course, Congress adopted in Article 66d2 itself.
Now, you say Congress adopted that. Where do we see in there Congress saying, we hereby adopt what the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces said in these cases?
You're right, Your Honor. They don't expressly say that. What they do is adopt specific language in a specific context. That is appropriate relief.
Now, appropriate relief, there's nothing fancy about that term. It's not a legal term of art where we can say, oh, well, clearly they got this word appropriate from this prior case of this court.
Your Honor, I'm going to disagree with you. I do think it's a legal term of art in this context. When we're talking about tardive relief, appropriate relief has a specific meaning that's been defined by this court over the years, and that meaning includes, first, meaningfulness, and that second, that
where Judge Efron did not cite to any prior precedent for that.
Your Honor, that kind of goes to the government's argument about the flagrant was poorly reasoned, is wrongly decided, and should be overturned. Even if this court were to believe that Flager was wrongly decided and should be overturned, it doesn't affect the statutory analysis, and that's because Congress didn't have the benefit of any overrule.
I mean, if we're going to read into Congress's intent, like, why isn't it just as likely that, like, this court held in Tardif that Article 59A prejudice isn't required for the court, for a CCA to give meaningful relief? Maybe Congress looked at that and said, no, of course it's required. You can't ignore Article 59A. So the appropriate, we're going to stick this term in there, appropriate relief, which recognizes sometimes no relief is appropriate. Like, why isn't that just as good of an explanation of what Congress did when it amended Article 66?
Your Honor, I think it's because of the context. I think you have appropriate relief in a specific context for non-constitutional post-trial delay, and this Court has specifically defined what that meant. When Congress adopts a term or phrase in the law that has a defined meaning by the courts, that the courts read into that meaning, that phrase, the meaning that the courts have already given it. And that's what happened here under the prior construction canon and the canon of imputed common law meaning.
Counsel, your position seems to now be that if you don't give meaningful relief, you have to give an explanation. What would the standard review be when we get here? So we get the explanation, and it's kind of a so-so explanation. How would we possibly review that?
Your Honor, I think there has to be deference given to the CCAs. The CCAs have specific fact-finding power in sentence appropriateness review in general, and I think there has to be some level of deference given to the CCAs in making that assessment. But what this Court's case law makes clear is that an explanation is required, and in this case, the Air Force Court provided no explanation, and therefore, this Court should remand, barring any further questions from this Court.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Regina Henenlotter, and along with Colonel Matthew Talcott, we represent the United States. Appropriate relief is not synonymous with meaningful relief. While appropriate relief will be meaningful, not all meaningful relief will be appropriate. Under Article 6062, the courts of criminal appeals may decide not to grant meaningful relief because to do so would be inappropriate. In light of this, the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals did not abuse its discretion by restoring to appellant one of his ranks.
Counsel, could you pull the mic up or speak up a little bit?
My apologies. Is that better, Your Honor?
Yes, thanks.
First, looking to Article 6062, the courts of criminal appeals may grant appropriate relief for excessive post-trial delays. By the simple language of that section, whether or not relief is appropriate is a discretionary opinion left to the courts of criminal appeals, and that is where it must stay. Looking to this court's precedent, there is not precedent that dictates the Court of Criminal Appeals must give a verbose explanation for why it arrived at the relief it did.
Well, he's not saying it has to be a verbose explanation, I don't think. I mean, how much can you say? But he is saying that they ought to have some explanation.
Yes, Your Honor, but that is not reflected in our court's precedent. If we turn to the 2024 case of Flores, this court said that the courts of criminal appeals do not have to explain its reasoning when assessing the reasonableness of a sentence. And that case was citing back to United States versus Winkleman, which also said that the courts of criminal appeals are not obligated to provide a detailed analysis when providing relief. If we look to other precedents, such as United States versus Tui and United States versus Rodriguez-Rivera, the core consideration is, can meaningful relief be granted that is not disproportionate to the harm suffered? That's especially important in these kind of cases because there's no requirement that the appellant be prejudiced by this post-trial delay. But if you consider what is a – if relief is warranted, then is appropriate relief available that is not disproportionate to the harm? Considering Rodriguez-Rivera, which was a constitutional prejudice case, even in that case, which suffered almost twice as long of a delay as in this case with appellant, the court still found that sentencing relief was not appropriate because it would have been disproportionate to any harm suffered by the appellant.
Is your position then that if there's no prejudice, there can be no relief?
No, Your Honor.
But how would it not be disproportionate if there's no prejudice? You have a zero as the denominator. It would seem your argument would logically mean that unless the appellant can show prejudice, no relief is appropriate, even if there's excessive delay.
It goes toward what Your Honor mentioned earlier, which is part of why TARDIF exists and why it has now been codified into Article 6062 is part of the purpose in granting relief is to send a message to the government that the delay that occurred in this case was excessive. It was unacceptable. And so part of the purpose of the relief is to send that message to the government that this process needs to be made more efficient and needs to move more.
But why would they have to say that to send the message? Why couldn't they just say it? I mean, they're the CCA, right? They're the highest court in their jurisdiction, aren't they? Can't they just say, hey, you folks down there below us, stop this. Get on the stick here. Get with it.
They could do so, Your Honor, and there will, I'm sure, be cases.
Wouldn't that be more effective than giving the accused relief that really isn't any relief?
Well, Your Honor, two responses to that. We would argue that there needs to be some type of meaning to the relief so that it is some type of relief. But also, it is more effective to say not just that the government had an excessive post-trial delay, but that because of that post-trial delay, there will be consequences to the case itself, meaning the sentencing relief that is granted to the appellant.
Right, but if I guess where I'm still stuck at is why can't they just say that if that's the message to be conveyed?
They can, Your Honor, but they can also choose under their discretionary authority to say, and because you took too long, we're going to grant the appellant some relief in this case.
And in this case, is that the message that was being sent?
I would argue yes, Your Honor, because when you look at the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals decision, they consider the gay factors that they've been using for the past few years. The two factors they most analyzed were the gross indifference to post-trial processing by the government and institutional neglect. Both of those factors are a clear – using both of those factors is a clear message to the government that the reason appellant is receiving relief in this particular case is because you, the government, did not process his post-trial expeditiously enough.
And let me ask you this. Do you agree or not agree that the relief, so to speak, granted appellant in this case was nominal at best?
I disagree that it was nominal, Your Honor.
Okay. And because
in the military, every rank has meaning. That's
not
why
to somebody who's on appellate leave.
It does still have meaning, Your Honor, because it forever changes his record of discharge from the military.
From E1 to E2?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was he not going to get
hired? Can he get a dishonorable discharge and he's going to care that he went from E1 to E2 when there's a dishonorable discharge?
Well, Your Honor, whether or not the appellant in each particular case finds the relief meaningful should not be the standard. Whether or not relief was meaningful should be looked at from a more objective standard. When relief was granted, is the appellant in exactly the same position they were in before their case came up for appellate review. And I would say that even if it's not particularly meaningful to an appellant, objectively, having a rank restored to you changes your records with the military forever. He can tell people in the future, if he cares to, that he was separated as an E2. He does not have to say he was separated with the lowest rank possible.
It goes on. I once was an E2, and I didn't see any difference myself.
And that would be a subjective view of it, Your Honor. But objectively, it would still be a change. Other members of the military, current or past, may feel that they did feel a difference between E1 and E2. But that's why the court shouldn't look at it from a subjective standard, because it muddies the waters too much. Objectively, appellant is in a better position than he was prior to his case going up for appellate review.
Wait, Counsel, that doesn't really matter to your position, right? I mean, even if we were to say E1 to E2 isn't really meaningful, you would say it doesn't matter because the result is still appropriate. I mean, you don't really have to argue that this is meaningful under your position. You just have to say whether it's meaningful or not is just a factor to consider. But ultimately, it's up to the CCA to determine whether it's appropriate, and they thought it was appropriate.
Yes, Your Honor. Our argument is still that whether or not relief is appropriate is within the control of the Court of Criminal Appeals. And that decision should be reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard. So looking at the restoration of appellant's rank, this court should consider, was that restoration arbitrary, capricious, or clearly erroneous? And it was not. It was still sending a message to the government, even if the court considers the rank itself to not have had particular meaning. It was still about sending a message to the government that the post-trial delay in this case was unacceptable.
Getting to Judge Maggs's point, I was intrigued because in your response a little bit ago, just a couple minutes ago, you were using the word meaningful, and you repeatedly used the word meaningful. In your view, in the view of the government, what does meaningful have to do with this particular statutory provision that uses the term appropriate?
Your Honor, while we acknowledge that the statute says appropriate, we do believe that meaningful does come up in its construction from prior precedent, not just from Pfluger. It is also mentioned in Rodriguez-Rivera and in Tui, because what those cases address with regard to meaningful is, can meaningful relief be granted that is not disproportionate? So we do not believe that whether or not relief is meaningful should be completely excised from the considerations of is relief appropriate.
So please let us explain that. It seems to be different from what I took from your brief. Explain that. In practical terms, what should this court be saying to the CCAs about what they have to consider in terms of if they choose to provide relief, what thought process do they need to use, what wording, language, approach do they need to use in their opinions?
Your Honor, in the simplest terms, the CCA should analyze if they believe relief is warranted in that case, can they grant relief that shifts appellant's position in any way? That would be a baseline standard for it. That is the baseline for meaningful. Has appellant's sentence been changed since their arrival for appellate review? And
I'm still a little confused. How does meaningful become the standard?
Meaningful is not necessarily the standard, Your Honor, so except in the fact that it is part of when relief is going to be appropriate. We would ask that this court consider the Gay factors, the six factors laid out by the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals, as a helpful guideline for the courts of criminal appeals to consider when deciding is relief appropriate. Now, there are six factors in Gay, and whether meaningful relief is available is the sixth factor. It is a consideration for the courts of criminal appeal to take in. It feels, for relief to be appropriate, they should consider, can we grant, based on how much time has passed, or what the criminal offense was, the totality of the circumstances in that case, is there any meaningful relief available to be granted to this appellant?
So what's the distinction that you're making now between the government's position and the defense position? It seems suspiciously similar.
Your Honor, to an extent, there is some similarity. We don't disagree that meaningful is a part of an analysis of appropriate relief. They shouldn't be completely, they should not be completely separated from each other.
So how does this tie into a textualist approach to understanding statutes? Congress used appropriate. Why shouldn't it begin and end right there?
I think to do so, Your Honor, would be to ignore this Court's precedent, an understanding from a textualist viewpoint that they only use the word appropriate. It's difficult to imagine how relief could be appropriate if it is wholly devoid of meaning. That could raise the impression that the relief that was granted would be arbitrary and capricious in that circumstance. But there's also the consideration that the courts of criminal appeals don't have to grant relief. It is fully discretionary. They may grant appropriate relief. And so the question is also, if they don't find that there's any appropriate relief to be granted, they can choose not to grant any relief. Or if they feel that granting relief with any meaning would be disproportionate, they don't have to grant any relief.
And it's the appellant's position that that's okay, but then they need to explain that. So is that the government's position also, that if the CCA, in exercising their discretionary authority, decides not to grant relief, that's the end of discussion, or must they explain that in their opinion?
Based on this Court's precedent, Your Honor, we do not agree that the courts of criminal appeals must explain why the relief they've granted or not granted would or wouldn't have been appropriate. That is not currently a burden that the CCAs have.
And that's based upon what we've said with regards to sentence appropriateness?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
May I return to your brief? In your brief on this point that we were just previously discussing, the government says meaningfulness is one factor that a CCA can consider in deciding whether granting relief would be appropriate. You're not moving away from that position, are you? You're just saying that the standard is appropriateness, and one factor, not the only factor, but one factor that the court can consider in deciding whether something's appropriate is whether it's meaningful. That's the position in your brief? Are you moving away from that now?
Not moving away from it, Your Honor, no. Merely clarifying. But we do find that it is a factor to be considered. But a factor to be considered in that the CCAs are not required to grant meaningful relief because they can grant no relief.
They're required to grant appropriate relief, and one factor to decide is whether it's appropriate is whether it's meaningful, but it's not the only factor.
Yes, Your Honor. There are, at least under Gay, which was a non-exhaustive list, they considered five other factors. For example, they did not consider whether relief was mean. They did not outline whether relief was meaningful in the present case. They were addressing that they were granting relief because of the gross indifference to post-trial processing by the government and their feeling that there was evidence of institutional neglect in post-trial processing. But there's nothing insufficient in the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals explanation. There is no requirement under Article D2 or under TARDIF precedent that they provide some greater analysis of each factor or why this relief in particular is meaningful or the most appropriate relief for this case. That's not an obligation on the part of the Air Force Criminal Appeals.
Without an explanation, how does this court review for abuse of discretion?
Is the decision arbitrary, capricious, clearly erroneous, or a miscarriage of justice, Your Honor? The explanation that's provided is sufficient for the court to review the Air Force Court's analysis of those factors and determine if the relief was appropriate in this case. Part of our concern with Pfluger is not necessarily that the case was remanded. It was that the court only used the de novo standard of review, but then remanded the case with an order to the Navy Court to provide meaningful relief. They didn't use the word appropriate in their remand. And that is what led the Navy Court, most likely what led the Navy Court to granting additional relief in the form of restoration of a rank and reduction of confinement time so that the appellant would receive a monetary benefit. What would be more appropriate in cases where this court feels that the lower court abused its discretion is to remand it back to that court to say, this relief that you've granted was not appropriate. Reanalyze this under Article 6062 and determine if appropriate relief is available or if there is no appropriate relief available. That would have been the more appropriate remand in Pfluger itself, because that was the problem in Pfluger. They granted relief that was a fiction. The bad conduct discharge had already been suspended and remitted by the time Pfluger's case came up on appellate review. And so granting relief by removing a bad conduct discharge that already didn't exist for the appellant did not objectively grant appellant any kind of relief.
Counsel, given that Pfluger and Tardif and a bunch of these cases all interpreted a statute that doesn't exist anymore, how relevant are those cases to our decision today?
They're still relevant, Your Honor, for the context that they provide. They need not necessarily be a bright-line rule from them, but they do provide good context of when relief is or isn't appropriate, what kind of factors to be considered when looking at a post-trial delay. Tardif, in particular, could be used if there is an allegation that the delay began prior to the entry of judgment, which Article 6062, I believe, only addresses delays following the entry of judgment. So there are still some windows where that case law may be relevant.
So, Major, I would ask you to take the last 20 minutes and distill it down to three sentences. If somebody is looking at years from now, particularly the CCA judges, says Valentin Andino stands for this proposition, take it away.
That while appropriate relief will have meaning, not all meaningful relief will be appropriate in every case. Relief need not have a monetary component to be appropriate. It should be viewed from an objective standard.
Any further questions?
May I briefly conclude, Your Honor?
Please.
The Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals did not abuse its discretion by restoring appellant's rank, and we ask this court to affirm appellant's sentence.
Thank you. Major Ward.
Judge Maggs, in your questioning of the government about the explanation needed for meaningful relief, I think it highlights an important distinction between the government's citation to Flores and sentence appropriateness and what we have here. When this court, or any reviewing court, looks at whether a CCA is giving meaningful relief, that's really hard to do if there's no explanation. And perhaps notably in this case is that the Air Force Court, under their own precedent, was required to award meaningful relief under the gay factors. And they didn't do so here. But it's impossible to say, was it because they thought it was inappropriate? Is it because they missed that factor? Is it because they missed Flager and Borisak and Roche? We don't know. And little deference should be given to whether it be a military judge or a CCA when they provide no explanation, even under an abuse of discretion standard.
Counsel, but the government says our precedent establishes that the CCA does not have to give an explanation. Would we have to overrule that precedent?
No, Your Honor, because this is a different legal context. We're talking about non-constitutional post-trial delay, not sentence appropriateness. We're just talking about in this one limited area of law, and there are probably reasons for that. There's a seek to remedy a specific harm, as I was talking about with Judge Sparks earlier, in this context, the non-constitutional post-trial delay. And in assessing meaningfulness, there needs to be some kind of explanation for why the meaningful relief would be inappropriate under the circumstances. Your Honors, there's a lot that the government and appellant agree with, that meaningfulness is required, and that meaningfulness essentially looks at the benefit an appellant is getting on appeal. And Chief Judge Olson, this approach, this meaningfulness approach, it is textualist, because the canons of statutory construction that are cited in our brief, the prior construction canon and the canon of imputed common law meaning, are textualist canons. We're looking at the text and seeing a phrase that has a specific legal meaning in a specific legal context, because this Court has defined it as such, and Congress adopts it under those canons of statutory construction when that phrase has already been defined and well settled by the courts.
Counsel, can I ask you a question? In your conclusion, in your brief, you asked this Court to remand the case with instructions that the CCA provide your client with meaningful relief. Given your argument today, though, shouldn't that be amended to either provide meaningful relief or provide an explanation for why meaningful relief is not possible?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's a more appropriate prayer for relief in this case. And just to briefly say that should this Court disagree that meaningfulness is a requirement under Article 66D2, because of the procedural posture of this case, 66D1 is still applicable, and that means that TARDF, as the Air Force Court recognized, is still applicable. So regardless of the meaning of 66D2, meaningful relief must have been provided in this case or otherwise explained. Barring any questions from the Court.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Captain.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is now submitted. The Court thanks counsel for both sides, and the Court will stand adjourned until tomorrow morning.
All right. The Court is adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.